Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. I better sit down and do the program.
Woo!
I got an email here at the last minute from our good friend Phil Restino, who is with Veterans for Peace. Their website is veteransforpeace.org, and there is an effort being put together. Welcome Congress back. Tomorrow is Congressional Call-In Day. This is put together by people who have served in the military, and they would like us to call the Capitol Hill switchboard tomorrow. You know what the number is, 202-224-3121. You can find it. Don't email me and ask me for it, okay, because I just can't answer all those emails. Just call the Capitol Hill switchboard or call your representative and your senators tomorrow. And Phil is recommending that we should tell them, quote, "I want you to act now to end the war and occupation of Iraq. The Congress has the constitutional right and a moral responsibility to use the power of the purse to withdraw all U.S. soldiers and contractors from Iraq on a rapid and binding schedule. 4.5 years of this war is too long. It has to end now." And they're recommending when you call, ask for the aide in the congressperson's office who deals with your issue. Tell the aide who you are and why you're calling, and identify yourself as a constituent. This is a good idea because, you know, a Bush is going to try to wring another $50 billion out of us in the next couple of weeks. So it's Congressional Call-In Day tomorrow. If you want more information here, go to their website, which is veteransforpeace.org, veteransforpeace.org, tomorrow. You will do it, right? Just take a minute? All right. Veteransforpeace.org. We got to do something. We got to do something. And that's something we can do. Weirdness abounds in this country. I mean, it is getting more and more and more bizarre. What about this? A B-52 bomber armed with 6 nuclear-tipped cruise missiles? 6 nuclear warheads loaded onto a B-52 and flown for more than 3 hours across several of the United States last week. That brought about an Air Force investigation and the firing of one commander. That's according to Pentagon officials. The chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Ike Skelton, said the mishandling of the weapons is, quote, deeply disturbing, end quote. Said the committee would press the military for details. Ed Markey, senior member of the Homeland Security Committee, said, quote, "It was absolutely inexcusable," end quote. Markey said, "Nothing like this has ever been reported before, and we've been assured for decades that it was impossible." So there's going to be an investigation now, and the investigation is supposed to take several weeks. And by the way, the incident was first reported by Military Times newspaper group, which is not sponsored by the Pentagon. 6 nuclear-tipped missiles, cruise missiles, flown across, Jesus. Now, here's the part, fifth word in, a B-52 bomber was mistakenly armed? No, 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 no. Unless you have the IQ of a sack of marbles and are blind and can't feel and can't see and can't read, you don't mistakenly load a B-52 bomber with 6 nuclear-tipped missiles. They are very easy to identify. This is the part that drives me crazy. The Associated Press reports it that way. A B-52 bomber was mistakenly armed. No, a mistake is when you put on your brown shoes with your blue pants. That's a mistake. This is a potentially devastating... Oh, wait a minute. Wait a second. Haven't they been talking about the possibility of some sort of incident in this country from Al-Qaeda? Makes you wonder, doesn't it? 6 nuclear-tipped missiles all through... mistakenly... loaded onto a B-52 bomber. Jesus, God! It's astonishing. Nothing that happens under the watch of this Bush crime family makes any sense, helps an American, is conducive to safety, common sense, logic. These people are murderous idiots. 6 nuclear missiles. Now, Prairie 2 writes in about this. Hey, Mike, the so-called accidental transport of 6 nuclear-tipped cruise missiles across the country suggests that the Bush crime family is readying a strike. The Air Force, Prairie 2 writes, was quietly retiring their nuclear cruise missile force this year. No new air-launched cruise missiles of any kind have been built since Reagan signed the SALT Treaty. A lot of them were used up in the 90s with conventional warheads attached to hit Iraq. The nuclear warhead-equipped ones look different. And hanging in groups of 3 on the pylons of an old B-52 would have attracted attention. The idea that they were accidentally loaded onto a B-52 is absurd. It's not like they're hanging on a rack in the back of the hangar next to the old lawnmower. Whoops! Prairie 2 adds, not very many flight crews would still be able to even fly with them. This plane was on its way to its war station. Apparently, somebody saw it when it landed in Louisiana and sounded the alarm. It probably wasn't supposed to land there, but couldn't continue on for some reason. The idea that the flight crew was unaware is not possible. The flight trim would have to be set for the missiles with warheads attached, or they would have been plowing up wheat fields outside of Minot, North Dakota. Nuclear war with Iran is imminent. It's no wonder Putin has his AWACS planes cruising the Arctic. From Prairie 2, frequent contributor, mistakenly, accidentally, 6 nuclear warheads on cruise missiles, armed and ready to go. Oops. It's astonishing, isn't it? And then, so the military cashiers somebody, they got caught. God only knows who ordered this. Probably the North America Command. You know, we are under a military governor right now. It's just that he has not exercised his power because Bush has not declared martial law. But there is a new theater of operations that was put together a couple of years ago, and it includes the United States. We are a theater of operations now. There is, if such a time comes. And those operations, of course, would be against Americans, I'm sure. Oh, wait a minute, that's right. The terrorists are going to follow us home. Yeah, okay. And speaking of the terrorists following us home, there were some very interesting letters to the editor in the New York Times today. One of them from Patricia Kenny in Whitestone, Queens, says, when President Bush says that leaving Iraq would make it more likely that our enemies would attack us at home, does he mean that warrantless wiretapping, interrogation under torture, and the Department of Homeland Security are ineffective in protecting the American people from terrorism? Well, Patricia, I can answer that for you. Warrantless wiretapping, torture, and the creation of the Department of Homeland Security never had anything to do with the security of this country. Instead, it had to do, and I'm sure Patricia knows this, instead it had to do with the consolidation of power and the movement of this country from a wounded republic to a fascist dictatorship. That's all.
He's what you call the swinging half-breed, singing his. I view our nuclear arsenal as a deterrent. I'm interested in having an arsenal at my disposal.
Yeah, that's the scary part, huh? Okay, Larry Johnson writing at the coffee house. At tpmcafe.com/blog/coffeehouse, yada, 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 yada. Here's what Larry Johnson writes. Why the hubbub over a B-52 taking off from a B-52 base in Minot, North Dakota, and subsequently landing at a B-52 base in Barksdale, Louisiana? That's like getting excited if you see a postal worker in uniform walking out of a post office. And how does someone watching a B-52 land identify the cruise missiles as nukes? It just does not make sense. So I called an old friend and retired B-52 pilot and asked him. What he told me offers one compelling case of circumstantial evidence. My buddy, let's call him Jack D. Ripper, reminded me that the only times you put weapons on a plane is when they are on alert or if you are tasked to move the weapons to a specific site. Then he told me something I had not heard before. Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana is being used as a jumping-off point for Middle East operations. Gee, why would we want cruise missile nukes at Barksdale Air Force Base, Louisiana? Can't imagine we would need to use them in Iraq. Why would we want to pre-position nuclear weapons at a base conducting Middle East operations? My friend's final point was to observe that someone on the inside obviously leaked the information that the planes were carrying nukes. A B-52 landing at Barksdale is a non-event. A B-52 landing with nukes, that is something else. Now, maybe, Larry Johnson writes, there's an innocent explanation for this. I can't think of one. What is certain is that the pilots of this plane did not just make a last-minute decision to strap on some nukes and take them for a joyride. We need some tough questions and clear answers. What the hell is going on? Did someone at Barksdale Air Force Base, Louisiana, try to indirectly warn the American people that the Bush administration is staging nukes for Iran? I don't know, but it is a question worth asking. Larry Johnson writing at TPM Cafe. Diane in Pittsburgh writes regarding the nukes and the pilots, and they didn't know they were aboard, and the American public was not in any danger, and this administration is protecting us, and my head screws on and off. Peter in Delray Beach writes, a military official told CNN there was no nuclear risk to public safety because the weapons were not armed. Officials believe that if the plane had crashed or the missile somehow had fallen off the wings, the warheads would have remained inert and there would have been no nuclear detonation. Though conventional explosive material in the warheads could have detonated. Oh, officials believe that? Are these the same officials who loaded them onto the B-52s? And Mike writes, if you believe six nuclear warheads were accidentally loaded onto a B-52, you'll easily believe that the Saudis who plowed into the World Trade Center accidentally flew into the World Trade Center when their real destination was to fly home to Saudi Arabia. This is a little bit bizarre, isn't it? Now, is any of it true? You see, this is what you have to think immediately in the age of Bush. Something happens that is very untoward, very unexpected, very out of sync with what has always happened in the past. Whether it is spying on Americans or torturing people, or letting bodies float in New Orleans for days, or flying nukes. across the United States to a staging area for the war in the Middle East. Something is not right here. And in the age of Bush, what could that mean? What could that mean? You have to question everything with this gang, don't you? On the other hand, maybe it's just a trick. Maybe it was done deliberately, and the leaking was done deliberately, so that the Iranians would immediately say, "Oops, we surrender, come and get our oil." More and more, don't you feel like you live in an asylum? The other day, Tuesday to be exact, Kathy and I took Molly to her preschool. We came to an intersection where the right-hand lane was for right turns only, and the middle lane, where I was sitting, was for straight ahead. This is a block and a half from Molly's school. I drove straight ahead, and the massive SUV in the right-hand lane didn't turn but kept going. I honked because it looked like a crash. And the cute little blonde soccer mom gave me the finger. We're living in an asylum.
I'm committed to reducing the amount of nuclear weaponry.
Yeah, you know how I'm going to do that? I'm going to drop some. I'm going to reduce nuclear weaponry because, right now I'm playing for October, November. Get us in a position in Iraq where the presidential candidates will be comfortable about sustaining a presence and stay there longer. Yeah. But you know what I'm going to do? You know what I'm going to do here in just a few days? I'm going to attack Iran. Son of a bitch, what do you think of that? Breaking news. Fred Thompson launched his bid for the presidency, Hollywood style. Thompson told Jay Leno in a taped appearance on NBC Television's Tonight Show, airing later on tonight, "I'm running for president of the United States. On the next president's watch, our country will make decisions that will affect our lives and our families far into the future. We can't allow ourselves to become a weaker, less prosperous, and more divided nation." Oh, Jesus, Fred. Where do I cast my vote for you? Fred Thompson's experience? Well, he was a senator from Tennessee, kind of a boutique senator, and he's best known to many of Americans for playing Arthur Branch on Law and Order, which was also an NBC property, just like Jay Leno's show is. Jesus, God. Oh, Fred, you make my knees weak. Fred Thompson is running for president. No kidding. Yeah. Michael B. English from Washington sent this into the New York Times. It was published today regarding Bush when he was in Iraq the other day with his photo op with live troops, not all of whom will be live by the time this week or this month is over, said troop reduction's possible. Here's what Michael English says. President Bush wants as much leeway to wage war in Iraq as possible so that in 2 years he can pawn off blame for the inevitable withdrawal to his successor. He knows that Congress and the American public want withdrawal now, and he has no intention of giving it to us. But he knows he can use that desire to his ends. And so he promises us that we will finally get what we want, just as soon as the surge works. And of course, for that to happen, we must continue to pour money into the war and to keep our troops there indefinitely. Of course, the problem with that is that the surge is not working and can never work. And he knows it. But he wants us But he wants to make us believe that it will so he can continue getting what he wants from us. He wants us to have a vested interest in giving him what he wants, in the expectation that it will lead to our getting what we want. Don't play this crooked game. Michael English, Letter to the Times. Tom Martinson in Minneapolis sent this to the Times. That 4 years after mission accomplished, the president must sneak under maximum secrecy into a remote desert location says volumes about the true state of the Iraq war. Tom Martinson in Minneapolis. And this is from, who's this from? Gary Priester in Placitas, New Mexico. It is all well and good for President Bush to warn, quote, the stakes in Iraq are too high and the consequences too great for our security here at home to allow politics to harm the mission of our men and women in uniform, end quote. But if Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney were truly concerned about our men and women in uniform, they would reinstate the draft so that the same weary and overworked groups of soldiers don't have to serve 3, 4, and 5 highly dangerous tours in Iraq. And here's the... Here's one more. This is about Krugman's column yesterday, Snow Job in the Desert, 2 days ago. And this is from Bill Williams in Sun City West, Arizona, who writes, President Bush is now laying the groundwork for the widely anticipated report this month by General David Petraeus, a top American commander in Iraq. There should be no doubt that General Petraeus will say that, quote, progress is being made, unquote, and that more time is needed to actually complete the job. General Petraeus is a very intelligent, highly respected man in the military, but he must be aware that if he does not come back with a report to the president's liking, he will share the fate of the widely respected, intelligent, and ominously prescient General Eric K. Shinseki. Does one really expect a young career officer to risk his future to speak the truth to George W. Bush, and in doing so throw away his future in the military? He is in the position of trying to accomplish the impossible and to remain an active military officer. The two positions are not compatible. This Iraq disaster will continue indefinitely, and after General Petraeus, another general will take up the baton. And here's the last one from Ted Corin in Austin, Texas, who writes, if a fawning American mainstream media uncritically accepts General David Petraeus's forthcoming rosy scenario about verifiable evidence without verifiable evidence to support it, as it did Secretary of State Colin Powell's, shame on the media, and shame on us if we fall for the same trick a second time. Oh my God, I hate these people, these Bush crime family people. Don't you? Don't you just hate them? What else we got here? This caught my eye. This is from The Guardian in the UK. I have to confess, beat me, flame me, make me do bad talk radio. I have to confess, I watched both Brian Williams on NBC tonight, and then immediately after that, here in the Atlanta market, they stagger these newscasts. Immediately after that, ABC with Charles Gibson. And plus, I watched a little bit of CNN today, although I did take Molly to the zoo today. So I wasn't around the telescreens that much, and they don't have them in the trees at the zoo yet, or on the merry-go-round, or in the primate house. So I didn't see a lot of television. Right now I'm planning for October, November, to get us in a position in Iraq where the presidential candidates will be comfortable about sustaining a presence and stay longer. So I didn't see a lot of television today. So when I saw this, this is from the Guardian of the UK, it immediately struck me, well, I haven't heard about anything about this in American media. Here it is very quickly. The Arctic ice cap has collapsed at an unprecedented rate this summer, and levels of sea ice in the region now stand at record lows, scientists have announced. Experts say they are, quote, stunned, end quote, by the loss of ice, with an area almost twice as big as the UK disappearing in the last week alone. So much ice has melted this summer that the Northwest Passage across the top of Canada is fully navigable. And observers say the Northeast Passage along Russia's Arctic coast could open later this month. If the increased rate of melting continues, the summertime Arctic could be totally free of ice in 20 years. Mark Cerisi, an Arctic specialist at the U.S. National Snow and Ice Data Center in Colorado, Colorado University in Denver, said, quote, "It's amazing. It's simply fallen off a cliff and we're still losing ice." End quote. The Arctic now has lost about a third of its ice since satellite measurements began 30 years ago, and the rate of loss has accelerated sharply since 2002. Dr. Cerisi added, quote, "If you asked me a couple of years ago when the Arctic could lose all of its ice, I would have said 2100 or 2070, maybe. But now I think that 2030 is a reasonable estimate." 20 years. It seems that the Arctic is going to be a very different place within our lifetimes, Dr. Cerisi said, and certainly within our children's lifetimes. The sea ice usually melts in the Arctic summer and freezes again in winter, but Dr. Cerisi said that would be difficult this year. He said, quote, "This summer, we've got all this open water and added heat going into the ocean. That's going to make it much harder for the ice to grow back," end quote. Changes in wind and ocean circulation patterns can help reduce sea ice to some extent, but Dr. Cerisi said the main culprit was man-made global warming. Do you know what that means? Are you 20 years old right now? By the time you're 40 and you have a six-year-old, there won't be any polar bears left? Molly has about 20 stuffed animals that I have picked up, most of them at the zoo. I love taking her to the Atlanta Zoo. I hate taking Molly to any zoo. But in the list of possibilities where she can see live animals, the zoo is kind of it. And at the Atlanta Zoo, they tried to make it into as natural a habitat for some of these creatures as they possibly can, which is bat squeeze, and I know it. I understand that. But I still take my daughter there. She loves to go to the zoo. Mostly, she likes to go to the zoo because we ride a real old-fashioned carousel, and then we take a little train, a little electric train that goes around the zoo, and it's a lot of fun. It goes under tunnels and past the Australian exhibit where all the wallabies and kangaroos and those sorts of creatures are, and it's just a lot of fun. And I just wonder what I'm going to tell her when she grows up, and if I'm still alive, and she points to her stuffed polar bear and say, "Daddy, by the way, what is this?" I'll say, "Well, honey, that's a polar bear." Polar bear. What does that mean, Dad? Oh, man.
There needs to be a focused coalition effort in the region against peace.
Well, you're doing a good job of it, Chuckle Nuts. Loss of Arctic ice leaves experts stunned. And again, I go back to what I said last week. Imagine if 15 years ago, when the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, and all of his filthy imitators had not mocked the idea, had encouraged, if all of talk radio, since it is such a powerful weapon for truth, if all of talk radio had focused on, hey, we got to do something, we would have had a 15-year jump. But no. I swear to God, when the lights go out because We have used up all the possible energy trying to maintain an environment where we can breathe. When those lights go out, I'm going to track down Rush Limbaugh and have a cigar with him. Mike in St. Paul writes regarding those loose nukes. Mike, the Pentagon locked and loaded those nukes, perhaps in relation to Bush's recent trip to Iraq. Had even a whisker of Bush been touched, the nukes would have been used on, and I'm speculating here, Iraq and Iran? That's a good point. That's a good point. And another one from Prairie 2. Mike, anybody who says the conventional explosives in a warhead could explode and it not be a problem is blowing smoke up your warhead access port. Warheads use a very high-tech plastic explosive wrapped around the plutonium sphere. The plastic theoretically won't explode without the proper voltage to the detonators, but nobody knows for sure what 25 years of radiation does to the detonator package. An uneven explosion would not likely produce a mushroom cloud, but would be the worst kind of dirty bomb. Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to know stuff like that. I don't want to calculate the odds or have the odds calculated for me. I really don't. Jack writes, "Good evening, Mike. Tonight, as my wife and I were watching the 6 o'clock news, at about 6:20 p.m., a commercial came on. You'll never believe what it was." Remember the old 1960s black and white drop, duck, and cover warnings? There it was. I couldn't freaking believe I was seeing this. When's the last time you've seen this on television? Seriously, there was the turtle advising the children to duck and cover as they scurried under their desks. Then out of nowhere, a voice comes on and begins talking about why you should switch to Cavalier telephone service. It was just flat out weird. Or was it merely a subliminal message for things to come? Too weird. Too weird for words. Let's quick try to work in a couple of calls here. Michael is calling from the Bronx, New York, listening on the internet. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
You know, I was, you know, been listening to a program. I read the blog regarding the fear-mongering of Bush and company, which, in my view, is just another form of terrorism. I wouldn't hesitate to call these bastards terrorists. But, you know, it made me think back to September 11th and all the stonewalling that the Bush administration has been doing and to find out exactly what happened with September 11th. And I'm hearing reports that Mr. Bush is in cahoots with Bin Laden and that Bush feeds and nurtures on creating destruction and fear amongst the people to use as an excuse for his unlawful, unconstitutional grabbing of powers. You know what I'm saying? So I cannot help but wonder if this next news that we're hearing about the nuclear missiles, the plot to attack Iran, I mean, all this is just a plot for the Bush administration. They're the ones creating and staging these attacks, no matter how many casualties that might result in, because we know these people don't give a rat's ass about innocent lives being lost. That's why we're still stuck in Iraq. And then they're going to use the catastrophes to try to claim more unlawful and unconstitutional powers. This Bush's dream of being king and ruler of the world, and he thinks he's playing Risk, Battleship. I mean, this isn't a game we're playing, and we're talking about innocent life, American and non-American. These criminals, I can't stand them.
I hear you, Michael.
I'm going out of my wits.
I hear you. Just hold on to something tight, and don't forget to breathe deeply, unless you're outside, in which case don't breathe deeply at all. Thanks, Michael. Are you ready for this? In about 5 minutes, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, MSNBC will be airing an hour-long interview with Charlie Manson. Oh, my God! Charles Manson? MSNBC? the network owned by Microsoft and General Electric, an hour-long interview. There's nothing else to put in that hour? Why don't they give the hour to us, Kathy? They give it to you and me. We could do something with it. I used to be on MSNBC a lot, remember? How long has it been since they've called? I used to be on CNN a lot, remember? How long has it been since they've called? Not that I mind, you know, I have a face for radio, but an hour-long Charles Manson interview coming up in less than 4 minutes. Now, if you want to switch over, go ahead. If you want to go ahead and watch Charlie Manson and let your Malloy program go, I understand. You have to prioritize, right? We have more interesting topics when you come back. What about this guy, the Cheney aide? What's his name? Michael Addington? David Addington, who said we're one bomb away from getting rid of the FISA court. These son of a bitches ought to be dragged in. Oh, I can't say that. We'll see you after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. Okay, never mind. It's a 20-year-old. It's not Charlie Manson this evening or last week. It's a 20-year-old interview that NBC back in the day killed because too many responsible journalists still worked at that network and they thought it would be not a good thing to do. That was then. This is now. So they're running the... 20 years ago when they ran it, they ran 7 minutes of it, and now they're going to run the whole thing with an actual FBI profiler who's sitting there with the NBC reporter so she can explain to us all about Charlie Manson. I would rather know about Donald Rumsfeld. Charles Manson is a semicolon, a cipher, a comma compared to Rumsfeld when it comes to murder. Jesus, are you kidding me? And I know... Rumsfeld, Manson never murdered anyone with his own hands. Neither did Rumsfeld. They got other people to do it for them. So, you know, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and the rest of these psychopathic killers in the White House, they're the ones that an FBI profiler on mass killers should be looking at. Not this little mouse of a man, Charles Manson, who 30 years ago... talked a bunch of losers into committing six murders. Don't email me. I know. If you remember, when was it? A couple of weeks ago, found at the UN in New York was what was reported to be a toxic agent produced by Saddam Hussein's regime a decade ago, phosgene. The poisonous solvent, a gas, phosgene. I believe, was that one of the chemicals outlawed after World War I? And then we went ahead and made sure that Saddam had it when he fought against the Iranians. It came from us originally. But uh-oh. Looks like we're fooled again. Chemicals discovered in the United Nations Manhattan offices feared to be a toxic agent produced by Saddam Hussein's regime a decade ago. Maybe nothing worse than a cleaning solvent. Sources said yesterday. Preliminary tests show the substance, which was found October 24th, was not the potentially fatal phosgene, sources said. A law enforcement force said, quote, it's not phosgene, and it tested negative for all other chemical warfare agents. It's not dangerous, and it's not what they thought, they had, end quote. UN officials discovered the chemical in a canister sealed in an unmarked plastic bag as they closed a weapons inspection agency on East 48th Street, a block from UN headquarters. By August 29th, UN officials said they traced the material using inventory sheets. They believed it was a chemical warfare agent seized by UN inspectors in 1996 from Iraq's chemical weapons facility near Samarra. UN officials couldn't account for why a potentially lethal chemical sat in Manhattan for 10 years undetected. Another law enforcement source said, well, the first round of tests indicate some kind of solvent. I guess we should be grateful it's not potentially fatal, but it just reveals another layer of mistakes. UN spokesman would not comment until final tests were complete. The UN spokesman said the UN was poised to name a 3-member panel to review the incident, examining how the samples were collected, stored, and how they may have been misidentified. Jesus God. Loose nukes in the sky and spick and span in a can in New York, and it's seen as phosgene. Peter in Vermont writes, Mike, I'm always sickened when I read how industrialized nations are racing to claim the new land that is revealed by the melting polar ice caps because they want the oil under there. That situation belies a total lack of sincerity in the industrialized nations' desire to develop alternative energies, don't you think? Yes, Peter, I do. But we live in the age, this is not the age of Aquarius, this is the age of hypocrisy. It is so thick, you could walk on it. This was interesting. This was in the Times today. It was about a guy named Steve Saccaroni, a farmer from California. And he's been a farmer since he was a teenager. He's in his 50s now. He built, according to the Times, a $50 million business growing lettuce and broccoli in the valley in California, relying on the hands of immigrant workers, most of them Mexican and many probably in the United States illegally. But as the Times reports, early last year he began shifting part of his operation to rented fields in Celaya, Mexico. Now, the Times reports, some 500 Mexicans tend his crops in Mexico, where they run, surprise, surprise, no risk of deportation. Mr. Saccaroni said, I'm as American red-blooded as it gets, but I'm tired of fighting the fight on the immigration issue. And then as the Times points out, a sense of crisis prevails among American farmers who rely on immigrant laborers, more so since immigration legislation in the United States failed in June and the authorities announced a crackdown on employers of illegal immigrants. An increasing number of farmers have been testing the alternative of raising crops across the border where there's a stable labor supply. Western Growers, that's an association representing farmers in California and Arizona, conducted an informal telephone survey of its members in the spring. 12 large agribusinesses that acknowledged having operations in Mexico reported a total of 11,000 workers there. And as the Times reports, the precise statistics on all this are not readily available. But Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, displayed a map on the Senate floor in July locating more than 46,000 acres that American growers were cultivating in just two Mexican states, Guanajuato and Baja California. Mrs. Feinstein said, quote, farmers are renting land in Mexico. They don't want us to know that, end quote. Everything is getting exported. Everything. Now our lettuce and broccoli production. What about the health issues? Environmental issues? Well, Mr. I'm not trying to be a smartass with his name. Scaroni. Mr. Scaroni said the greens he cuts in Mexico go to bagged salads in supermarkets in the U.S. And because of that, he follows the same food safety practices as he does in California. He also encloses his fields in fences in Mexico and has installed drip irrigation systems for the filtered water he uses. He trained his Mexican field crews to wear hairnets, arm sheaths, and sanitized gloves, and held drills on the correct use of portable toilets. But that was interesting. In the clean, scrubbed cooling house, women in white caps scrutinized produce for every stray hair and spot of dirt. Mr. Scaroni, his operation is now on 5 farms approaching 2,000 acres in Guanajuato. And he says a few of his Mexican employees actually came from California, like Antonio Martinez Aguilar, a field manager who worked there for 15 years but could never get immigration documents. Mr. Martinez said, "I tried everything, but there wasn't anything anyone could do to make me legal." And Mr. Scaroni, the white man, he says, "At least I know the one thing I don't have to worry about here is losing my labor force because of an immigration raid." Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Toys from China, food from Mexico, truck drivers from Mexico. What the hell is going to be left here? Does anybody have any idea? What is going to be left? Seriously, what's going to be? Well, I guess it really doesn't matter. Former Assistant Attorney General in the Bush crime family, Jack Goldsmith, a real right-winger, real conservative, conservative as they come when it comes to political ideology, he's written a book. Aren't they all? He's written a book that allows us proles to get some new insights into what he saw and what the Bush gang has been up to. And as Steve Bannon writes at alternate.org, well, originally at the Carpetbagger Report, that means more alarming revelations about out-of-control officials who treat the rule of law like a punchline. A little more on this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So anyway, this guy, Jack Goldsmith, has a new book out. And as I mentioned, he's a former assistant attorney general in the Bush crime family. He's as conservative as they come, when it comes to political ideology. But he seems like he wants to highlight the extent to which he disapproved of the White House's excessive tactics. And Goldsmith also apparently considers David Addington and Dick Cheney. Addington is Cheney's legal alter ego. Mad. Lunatics. According to what Steve Bannon wrote at the Carpetbagger Report, Goldsmith shared the White House's concern that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act might prevent wiretaps on international calls involving terrorists. You know, that was his job. That's the guy's job, Assistant Attorney General. So he goes to Addington and Cheney, and he says, you know, we might not want to do this. But Goldsmith deplored the way the White House tried to fix the problem, which was highly contemptuous of Congress and the courts. Goldsmith recalls Addington telling him in February 2004, "We're one bomb away from getting rid of that obnoxious FISA court." Their debate over the Geneva Convention was even more striking, according to Mr. Goldsmith. When he presented his analysis of the Geneva Conventions at the White House, Addington, according to Goldsmith, became livid. According to Goldsmith, David Addington said, quote, "The president's already decided that terrorists do not receive Geneva Convention protections." You cannot question his decision. Goldsmith then explained that he agreed with the president's determination that detainees from al-Qaeda and the Taliban weren't protected under the Third Geneva Convention, which concerns the treatment of prisoners of war, but that different protections were at issue with the Fourth Geneva Convention, which concerns civilians. Addington, according to Goldsmith, says Addington was not convinced. Months later, when Mr. Goldsmith tried to question another presidential decision, Addington expressed his views even more pointedly. If you rule that way, Addington claimed in disgust, the blood of 100,000 people who die in the next attack will be on your hands. Jesus God. According to Goldsmith, the goal all along was to get rid of the FISA court entirely so that these thugs could continue to freely eavesdrop on whoever they wanted with no warrants, no oversight, nothing. And so in the book, we have Dick Cheney's top aide drooling with anticipation at the prospect of another terrorist attack so that they could seize power without challenge. Son of a bitch! What? I mean, and impeachment is off the table for these monsters? Addington views the next terrorist attack as the golden opportunity to seize yet more power. Sitting around the White House, Glenn Greenwald wrote this, dreaming of all the great new powers they will have once the new terrorist attack occurs, is nothing short of deranged. Oh, my God. Just astonishing. The blood of the 100,000 people who die in the next attack will be on your hands. You know, for 5 or 6 years, maybe longer, I've been batting around certain words and phrases on this program vis-a-vis the Bush crime family, like the Bush crime family, or madness, or insanity, or deranged, or lunatics, or psychopaths, or sociopaths. You know what? True seeker, they really, really are. This is not hyperbole on my part. This is not overstatement. This is not drama. Oh, let's listen to the liberal talk show hosts get all funky on the radio. No, 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 no. That's not what this is at all. You know what this is? This is the clear observation of someone who took a couple of courses in college on abnormal psychology. Not that many. When I got too deep into abnormal psychology, it was just a little bit too freaky for me because I started seeing family members and possibly myself. So I switched and went into international relations. No, I didn't graduate. I have enough credits together to probably graduate someday, but no, I didn't graduate. Not implying that. I have no degrees. But I enjoyed thoroughly studying on the university level. But abnormal psychology, I had just enough, so that when a deranged psychopath mass killer takes over the United States of America, guess what? I can identify him. Very simply. He makes Charles Manson look like a hot fudge sundae. Christ Almighty! And you were able to identify him also. Oh God. It's just, I don't believe the job I have, you know, doing this stuff. And I don't believe the job that you have volunteered to do, listening to this stuff, night after night. This is madness, isn't it? We'll be right back. This is Nova M Radio. We can win a million pounds.
see anything suspicious. Utility workers, lobstermen, went out there pulling their pots to get the lobsters if they see something suspicious taking place along the main coast.
Regarding the man who wrote in, Jack, was it Jack, who saw the duck and cover commercial as part of an advertisement, obviously, for a phone company, but still, there it was. Jen writes in a couple of things, and she says, third of all, turtle, duck and cover? You mean in the 50s people were actually told to cover their heads with their hands to protect themselves from a nuclear weapon? I never heard of this in school, and I'm just shaking my head, trying to tell myself I misunderstood the gentleman's email. No, Jen, you didn't misunderstand the email. Anybody who wants to see some of those old films, just do a Google on Duck and Cover. And if you're under the age of 50, you're probably under the age of 45, you're probably not familiar with those. To look at them now is, you know, it's a real guffaw. You can, people my age, we sit back and look at those and go, oh, my God, did we really think all we had to do is get under our desks in school and the nuclear bomb would go off and there would be a little dust fly around and that would be the end of it? And then we could all come out and run home to Mommy and Daddy, who would have opened the doors to the bomb shelter and let us in. Everything's fine. We just stay in there for 3 or 4 days and come out and go back to church and praise Jesus and thank God for Dwight Eisenhower or whoever was president. It's just madness. It's madness. And there was a thought for a while, at least I had the thought, that maybe we had gotten beyond that. The whole era of mutually assured destruction, Jonathan Schell's book, The Fate of the Earth, the term nuclear winter, the idea that a nuclear exchange would be uncontrollable and we'd all fall down dead and everything dies with us. When all humanity is dead, everything is dead. And when that happens, nothing ever existed because there's no one to remember it. There's nothing left. And I think those scary books in the 60s, 70s, and even into the 80s were so instrumental in trying to get people to come to terms with what we had done with the unleashing of nuclear power as a weapon. And of course, the movie like On the Beach, Neville Shute's book, On the Beach. And it turned into a movie, which came out in the when did it come out? In the early 60s? I think it was the very early 60s. Even though the world was being consumed in madness, nuclear madness, there was still an edge of insanity, and mostly it came from the poets and from the artists and from the writers. It did not come from the scientists and the politicians and the industrialists. No. As it always does, when an entire civilization or species is going insane, as ours has done several times in our history, but never with nuclear weapons, the only people who retained a grasp of sanity were the poets, the artists, and the madmen. You know, the writers. So here we are again. With a B-52 flying over the United States with six accidentally loaded nuclear-tipped cruise missiles.
What was a mistake? It was just a mistake.
And I've now had it with Barack Obama. I will not vote for him. If he becomes the Democratic Party nominee, I'll stay home or vote something else. He's taken this get tough stance against Iran. He wrote an op-ed piece that starts out by saying Americans need to come together to confront the challenge posed by Iran. Challenge? He goes on to say, yet the Bush administration and an anonymous senator are blocking a bill with bipartisan support that would ratchet up the pressure on the Iranian regime. It's time for this obstructionism to stop. The decision to wage a misguided war in Iraq has substantially strengthened Iran, which now poses the greatest strategic challenge to U.S. interests in the Middle East in a generation. Really? I would think that, Mr. Senator, would be Saudi Arabia or Israel. But Iran? He goes on to say, Iran supports violent groups and sectarian politics in Iraq, fuels terror and extremism across the Middle East, and continues to make progress on its nuclear program in defiance of the international community. Meanwhile, Iran's president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, has declared that Israel must be, quote, wiped off the map, end quote. Of course, that's not what Ahmadinejad said. But never mind, it doesn't matter what he said all those months ago. What matters is how it has been spun and reported and given a life of its own. I'm not defending Ahmadinejad. I couldn't care less about Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. I really couldn't. But he's not a threat to me. And truth be told, this twerp is not a threat to Israel. If Ahmadinejad paid attention, he would understand that if Israel gets a head cold, he will die of pneumonia. Oh, well. But Obama is starting to sound like Bush. In fairness to Obama, the person who sent this to me writes, much of his op-ed is actually very critical of the Bush administration for their lack of diplomacy, but it hardly matters because by accepting the Bush framing of a looming crisis against Iran, he's given all the right-wing pundits the ammo of saying, look, even that liberal Obama thinks we have to take out Ahmadinejad. He even justifies the threat by citing Ahmadinejad's words against Israel, although unfortunately he relies on the Bush administration's translation of Farsi, which, as we've seen before, only has a glancing relationship with reality. Yada, 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 yada. But Barack Obama, you see, is getting desperate because I think it's clearly understood at this point, and you can disagree with this as you like. But the Democratic nominee for President of the United States in 2008 will be, drum roll please, Hillary Clinton. There is no doubt whatsoever. None. Now, that's not my choice. That's not, you know, I'm just giving you, you know, my 2 cents worth. The Republican nominee, I think, is going to be Mitt Romney. But the Democratic nominee will be, no question, hey, my good friend Bart Kopp has been talking about this for, what, 2 years now. The Democratic Party nominee for President of the United States in 2008 is. It's a done deal, fait accompli. It's all over. You might as well send down the red, white, and blue balloons. Hillary Rodham Clinton, period. End of story. So in light of that, Barack Obama is freaking out. He's just absolutely freaking out. Don't know what to do. So, okay, I'll pretend like I'm George Bush. Bomb, 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 Iran. Bomb, 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 Iran. Bomb, 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 Obama, Iran. Whatever. Jesus. Isn't it crazy? Isn't it just absolutely crazy? Trita Parsi is the author of the just-released book titled Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States. Mr. Parsi said today, what on the surface may appear as business as usual in the war of words between Tehran and Washington may in reality repeat an earlier pattern widely suspected to have been aimed at provoking war with Iran. Focusing on Iran may help deflect attention away from the surge strategy's failure in Iraq. It can also help convince Congress that Iran is responsible for U.S. misfortunes in Iraq and that cutting the funds for the war would embolden the clergy in Tehran. Accusing Iran of seeking to put an already unstable Middle East under the shadow of a nuclear holocaust and promising to confront Tehran, whose actions threaten the security of nations everywhere. Before it is too late, echo statements made by the Bush White House about Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein prior to the invasion of Iraq. But Truth Seeker, end quote. But Truth Seeker, you knew that. You knew that. And the thing that bothers me, Israel justifies its nuclear arsenal of anywhere from 200 to 400 nuclear weapons by saying that it lives in a dangerous neighborhood. right? Now, of course, they officially deny that they even have one. Who was the Iraqi? The Israeli military guy. It's right on the tip of my tongue. Who blew the cover on Israel's nuclear arsenal several years ago? It'll come to me. No, Reggie will send it to me. But anyway, Israel has up to 400 nuclear weapons and says, hey, look, we have to have them because we live in a dangerous neighborhood. Well, you know, Iran lives in the same neighborhood, right up the street. Oh, I know. Iran bad, Israel good, period. That's it. No debate, no discussion, none. If you do debate it or discuss it, you are anti-Semitic. What else we got here? Well, a lot of stuff. When we come back after this break, though, I think it might behoove us to take a phone call or two. The number here is 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network.
And I've heard you talking about making the world safer and about all the men you have to kill. Well, I've just got one question and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb? Maybe Jesus would bomb the Afghans on some kind of vengeful whim. Maybe Jesus would drive.
Went to Iraq, come out the black. No turning back to war with villages attacking bomb.
I hated when they did that to that record. That was such a party record, Barbara Ann. Oh my God. Mordecai Vanunu was the person I was trying to think of who explained to the world that Israel was a nuclear power and one to be reckoned with for sure. So thanks, Reg. Couple other people sent it in, too. Here's an email, very quickly. The subject is abnormal psychology. Mike, somewhere in my graduate psych studies, I remember seeing theoretical articles about Hitler suggesting that Hitler was not an aberration, but more an outgrowth of the German psyche of the time. I have found myself wondering to what extent George Bush, Dick Cheney, David Addington, and the rest of the cold-blooded killers running our government are somehow an outgrowth of a very dark aspect of our collective psyche. What's the difference between the bloodlust of the death penalty and the willingness to waterboard or torture someone to the point of organ failure, or the self-righteous justification for either? What depresses me most about this time is not that there are monsters like Bush and Cheney and the rest who exist, but that we as a culture are willing to allow them to take and remain in positions of power. I believe that the same judgments that have been made about the German population that stood by and allowed the Nazis to march Jews into the ovens will be made about Americans who have allowed the Bush-Cheney cabal to slaughter Iraqis, shred the Constitution, and bomb any country they damn well please. That we are not in the streets, in a general strike, shutting down the country until these criminals are out of office is a crime for which we all deserve to be prosecuted. Bridget. Yeah, well, sure. And haven't we talked a lot about that on this program? The idea that George W. Bush and his tribe of murderers is, as Bridget points out, an outgrowth of some crypto insanity that we all share is really scary to me. I mean, it really is, because I, you don't understand. I've kind of made the point that I'm not a very spiritual person on this program, but I've never made the point that I understand the full powers of the mind. I do know that from what little bit of reading I do that's not political, that we use a very small percentage of the inherent or nascent power of our brains, that if we could really unlock all the power in that massive computer sitting inside our skulls, we'd be amazed at what we could see, do, comprehend, solve. But I'm making an effort. I bought an Andrew Weil CD. I did. An outgrowth of our insanity. We produce these demons. And of course, that I believe. I mean, all you need in America to become president is the right number of votes in the right number of states so that you can capture the Electoral College. You can have, how many votes in the Electoral College? Is it one for every representative? Jesus, I should know this. I guess that's it. Or is it every representative, every senator? I think it's every representative. Let's just leave it at that. 435 potential votes in the Electoral College. And in order to get 434 of those 435, you don't get a parallel number of voters in the popular vote. In certain key districts, key states, if you just get 50% plus one, you get all of the electoral votes. And because of that, there are enough people in this country who are collectively mad, totally insane. They're the type of people that probably gnaw on their own limbs when you know there's a thunderstorm. Somehow we wound up with a close race, close enough, even, and of course, with the jiggered machines and the lies and the deceptions by these companies, these Christian fanatic-run companies like Diebold and ESS or ISS or ASS, whatever the hell it is. But enough Americans voted for George Bush to bring it within the vote totals an acceptable, unquestionable margin of error, unless you're determined, like Brad Friedman or some of these other people have said, no, 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 this couldn't be. But here we are. So, yeah, Bridget's right. We produce this. What was that movie from way back in the 50s when we had all the science, or the 60s, that Robbie the Robot was in it? Forbidden Planet. Weren't the monsters that existed outside the perimeter of that Earth spaceship that landed on this planet, weren't those monsters really being produced by somebody's mental projections on the crew? I seem to remember that. I was a kid. That movie scared me almost as much as Wizard of Oz. But I digress. Got time to take a call? I'm sorry. All right, when we come back, we'll start with, who are we going to start with? We'll start with Jeff, and we'll talk with Joe and Edie and William, and we have one open line. So if you want to get in here, I promise you when we come back, we'll do some phone calls. According to Dar Jamail and Ali al-Fadhili, two writers from Iraq. Government death squads are ravaging Baghdad. And I heard Farid Zakaria, who is, he writes for Newsweek, isn't he? He's an expert on the Middle East. Say tonight on ABC News, the one thing I did hear that made sense is that the United States has assisted the Shia Muslims in Iraq in ethnic cleansing greater than anything we've been involved in except what was happening in Central Europe during the Clinton years, Milosevic did. But, yeah, that's true. Ethnic cleansing, that's what we do now. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. We'll be right back. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Okay, thanks everybody who wrote in to me about the Forbidden Planet. The monster was the power of the id. Which really, as I think back, I was a kid then, it really pissed me off when you know, that was the monster. What are you talking about, that's the monster? What? Psychology? What does that word mean? I wanted it to be some fanged, hairy, slipped through the 12th dimension beast. But no, it turned out to be that part of the consciousness that doesn't give a tinker's damn about reality. Bush is pure id. You know, the only need that is to be satisfied is his. He, you know, he wreaks this every time he opens his mouth. That's what the id is. Of course, you know this. I'm not lecturing you. You know this. You know this better than I do. An uncontrolled id is equals Holocaust. Man with a capital H. Or mass death, mass murder, executions, torture. The only desire that needs to be satisfied is mine. That's it. As promised, phone calls. Jeff is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going.
I just saw a couple of very fascinating movies tonight, and I wanted to talk about them.
Sure.
And it's kind of interesting that I saw them one right after the other, which probably takes a little strong of stomach for anybody that wants to repeat my feat. It was The 11th Hour, Leonardo DiCaprio's movie, and then right after that, I went and saw No End in Sight.
Yeah, I've seen neither one.
You haven't seen those?
No, we, you know, it's a little bit difficult to get out when you have a 3-year-old and you live in a geographically undesirable area getting a babysitter. You know? But yeah, I know they're both out. I think I've heard of or read a little bit about each one. We'll get to see them.
They're very, very excellent movies. And earlier you were stating something about the polar ice melting and whatnot.
Arctic.
The Arctic ice.
Right.
That information plus a lot more actually came from The 11th Hour. I don't know what your source was for that information that you were reading, but I heard that exact same information in the movie The 11th Hour, and it's just. It really, that movie is really touching. I mean, it goes to the brink of what we're doing to this planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, it shows you, you know, in very good detail of, you know, the steps that we're taking and what we're doing to this planet. And, you know, it's kind of scary. I mean, you know, another 20 years and, you know, we're not going to be able to recover this planet if we keep going.
Well, you know, we may be beyond that point now, which I can't think about. I can't get my mind around the idea that we can't pull back, that we can't come up with the kind of leadership necessary to pull back, that we can't somehow figure out a way to come back from the brink. If I start thinking otherwise, Jeff, you know, I start to get really, really weird. Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Jesse writes, so Obama and Hillary are on board. That gives 52 for sure votes to do Iran. Then Jesse adds, when we would load nukes on the ship while I was in the Navy, the bunker was guarded by about 100 Marines. We would be tripping on acid, standing on the deck. Everyone was armed, either with shotgun or handguns. So I guess that these bunkers are not guarded anymore? Yeah, well, it was an accident, Jesse. Somehow, just inadvertently, somebody made a mistake, and 6 nuclear-tipped cruise missiles were loaded on board outside the wing pylons on a couple of or on one B-50. You know, just an accident. Just an accident, nothing to worry about. Joe is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Listen, man, maybe I'm more paranoid than most, but what I figure is you got six nuclear missiles in a rotary launcher that some master sergeant probably put in the bomb bay. I don't think he does that by accident. See,
but they weren't. The weird part was they weren't in any. They weren't inside. These are missiles. They weren't bombs.
Yeah, well, they have launchers. They have launchers that they fit in the bomb bay that rotates like a Gatling gun, and they can fire rockets off.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But here's the thing, man. To me, see, a message was being sent. Like I said, somebody in this government is sending a message to somebody else that we got access to these weapons. That's why I think it happened. That's, like I said, I'm paranoid. But I don't believe 9/11. I didn't believe it from the day after it happened. And like I said, this country was taken over in 1963 when they assassinated Kennedy. The whole scope of the country changed. And like I said, I think somebody sent a message yesterday.
Yeah, I have the same feeling, Joe. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama, listening on the Internet. Hey, Edie.
Hi.
Hey.
Duck and cover. I remember.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I remember, too. Oh, my God.
My dad told me, he said, he served in Europe during the Second World War. He said, if there ever is a Third World War, you just might as well run out in the middle of the street and open your mouth.
Sure.
And then my mother, she freaked out because I was only about seven, explained about radiation poisoning. And they assured me that that would never happen because the Russians wanted to live as much as we did. And I said, okay. And that's the kind of stuff you and I grew up under.
Oh, I know. I think about it. I realize every generation has certain horrors to deal with, no matter if it's in this country or some other country. But I think ours was, in a sense, unique in that we were the first generation that knew for sure that the entire planet could be ended. If the wrong decision was made by people,
by the other.
People like Truman, Kennedy, Eisenhower, Khrushchev, even Stalin. He didn't die until 1953. So all these Brezhnev, Reagan, all of these people, we had no choice but to believe that they would not pull the trigger. And as you know, as most people should know, in 1962 we came as close as probably we've ever come to having a full nuclear exchange with the Soviet Union, which would have meant the end of everything. So, having grown up with that, I sometimes wonder if that's why I am as crazed as I am, as angry, as unable to deal with religious concepts. I totally deny spirituality. I totally deny any sort of existence of anything other than what I can see, touch, and feel. And that's hell, because I've had periods in my life, I'm sure you have too, Edie, where you try to turn to some higher power, and it doesn't work. Because I came to understand early on, I don't know how old you were, and I don't know how old I was, but I came to understand early on that the higher power was thermonuclear war. That was the only higher power that really existed.
Well, when my son died last year, my atheism actually comforted me. And I know for a fact I'll never see him again. And his sister knows that. And so we come to terms with it.
Right.
And speaking of horrors, what about that Fred Jabba the Hutt Thompson that the right is so wet over?
Well, who cares if this washed out stupid television actor decides to run who was a liar and an enabler for Richard Nixon all the way back during Watergate?
Yeah.
He's a snitch, a think. He tried to protect Nixon's criminality, and the Republicans are just, I mean, their hands are twitching because this freak is going to run. If this doesn't explain in one paragraph how degenerate Republicans are, I don't know what does. Fred Thompson, world-class liar, perjurer, what a thug.
Nixon Bagman.
Yeah, he is. Hey, I got to leave there. Thanks, Edie.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Two open lines. Get in here, damn it. 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say?
The second pillar of peace and security in our world is the willingness of free nations to retain aggression and evil by force.
You sorry son of a bitch. Gordon in Oklahoma writes, Mike, isn't it rather odd that a story leaked about the nukes leaving North Dakota when we can't get the truth about Pat Tillman? As you know, we're dealing with an administration that has cloaked itself within an iron curtain and no information escapes unless it serves to benefit the Bush family evil empire. One possible explanation, and perhaps the only one that makes sense, is that someone inside the military leaked this story as a cry for help. The intent is to warn those of us that have an ounce of sanity left about the horror this madman in the White House is going to unleash. I simply cannot believe that an attack on Iran is going to occur. How about that, huh? I can't believe it. I can't believe that the United States military will go along with a third country being attacked when we are caught in a meat grinder in Iraq from which there appears to be no exit. Afghanistan is rapidly becoming the same way, and I still can't believe that war with Iran is imminent. And I've read all this stuff. I understand. Months ago, I was talking about the placement of a third Navy battle group. I believe it's the third one near the Persian Gulf. So, you know, it's not that I'm not aware of the signs and portents. I just cannot believe that the United States military would allow this to happen. They are struggling as it is. Any responsible flag rank officer will tell anyone who wants to listen, off the record, of course, that the United States military has been wrecked. It's a goddamn train wreck, thanks to Bush. It is horrifying to think of the position that the United States military is now in. If you have any respect for or whatever for the military and its organizational structure, what its function is supposed to be, to defend the country, yada yada yada. I understand. I don't want to get into all that misuse of the military. I know it's been going on for a century. I understand that. But this is, I mean, it's utter craziness, and it's something that I just simply cannot believe that the military will go along with this. I have no doubt that Bush or Cheney or Addington or any of these snakes and vermin and creeps and killers and vampires and ghouls and dead flesh eaters that inhabit our government, they don't care. They couldn't care less. They want this. I mean, they do care. They want death and destruction and murder and mayhem and gore and blood. Some of them because that'll make their Jesus happy, and some of them because it'll make their banker happy, and some of them because it will make them happy. The real sociopaths. But I've got to believe. I've got to. I can't not believe it. That the U.S. military will not allow this to happen. Somehow, some way, somewhere. Back channels, basement channels. I don't care how it's done, who talks to whom, but I just have to put my faith in the United States military that they will not let this happen. That they will not let this happen. Now, for all of you who are sitting there laughing about Malloy's misplaced faith in the U.S. military, that's all I got. That's all I have. What do you have? Huh? What do you have? That's all I have. There's no check and balance. Most of the Democratic presidential nominees are all for it. Kill the sons of bitches! They're all for it. The Republicans, forget the Republicans, they drink blood. They eat human flesh. Forget them. Who's left? Who's left, huh? Who's religious leaders in this country? Kill, kill, kill! Especially the Christian fanatics. Who's left? What institution? Media in this country? Are you kidding me? Do you know what the television networks, especially the cable networks, are doing? They're selecting their music and their graphics so that when we attack Iran, they can have nice graphics and nice, powerful martial music like they did with Gulf War 1, 2, 3, 9, 12, and 15. That's what they're doing. Who's left? Who's left? There's one institution in this society that can stop this madness. And as far as I'm concerned, only one. Now, whether they do it or not is that's to me, that's the major question. That's the big question. That's the big one. The big question. Are there, because I also understand that there are military officers of in command and control positions who are all for this. The crazies, the real crazies. And some of them have stars on their shoulders. And some of them, when they drive around in their limousines, have flags up on the bumpers. I understand that. There are some of them who want this for their own personal reasons, some of whom it's a Jesus thing again. And for the rest of them, for some of them, it is to prove their manhood. They got to kill, send people to go die. But there are leaders, military leaders, who will not do this. I have to believe that.
Men who were fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives, fighting for the memory of all who fell before. But the soldiers of peace just can't kill anymore.
Twenty-five before the hour, our aviation expert Seth writes in, if I remember correctly, the movement of special weapons, which in addition to nuclear munitions includes chemical and biological weapons, requires a series of signed orders from a commander with nuclear authority. This would be a general officer. Somewhere there's a set of orders that authorize the movement of these weapons, and I'd really like to see who signed them. Again, referencing the reports today that six... nuclear-tipped cruise missiles were accidentally sent from South Dakota to Louisiana. Jack writes in, during the break, Mike, I turned to CNN to see if there was any real news being reported, only to find Dr. Sanjay Gupta using a telestrator with a split-screen image of an actual slide of wrestler Chris Benoit's brain. As you may recall, Benoit murdered his family, perhaps due to steroid use, and Dr. Gupta is attempting to find out why. This is just un-effing believable. There's no accountability whatsoever in this country. My country tis of thee, sweet land of tyranny, of thee I sing. Yeah, well, I'm real familiar with that story, Jack. I hate to say, because, you know, he was from here. He lived in a subdivision. We're at, Kathy, south of the city? Not a subdivision. He lived in, you know, a rich person's mansion. And do you want me to tell you how he murdered? Well, I won't. Sick. All right, back to the phone calls. William is calling from Hollywood, California, listening on the Internet. William, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, William.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Well, that's good.
Some pretty horrifying stuff today, hasn't it?
It's madness. It's madness.
I know. I was thinking about those bombers. I mean, I'm sorry I even read about that earlier today, but I mean, you know, it like this emailer just said, you know, it takes a procedure, And this is, what, last week?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to take them several weeks to find out how this happened. I mean, give me a break. Several weeks?
Oh, yeah, like there's going to be an investigation.
Yeah, and even if there was, why would it take a week to do it, but it takes several weeks to figure out how it happened? They know exactly what happened right now.
Sure, of course.
You know, who are they kidding? And it's the same thing with these, you know, we voted in 2006 to get the Democrats in there, and the purpose was what? It was to get out of Iraq, wasn't it?
Or something.
Yeah, something like
something,
that.
Something, you know, I'm trying to remember. It was so long ago.
I know.
William, what was it? Over a year ago. A long, long time ago.
Well, it feels like over a year ago, and it hasn't been, but it's getting close.
I know.
But, I mean, I think that's what the purpose was. I mean, my memory's failing me these days because there's so much happening, but you can't tell me that they don't know about Iran. I mean, how can they come across and say, you know, we have to call? I'm not against people calling and emailing and writing, okay?
Uh-huh.
But I've done that, and I've gotten that form letter they send you. You know, it doesn't tell you anything, really.
All right.
I tried impeachment with Boxer, and I got something entirely off topic,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a form letter.
Sure.
But, and I'm not against people doing that, but, and I'm not saying not to do it. I don't want to discourage anybody from doing anything they feel is going to fix some of this garbage. But they've got to know. If they don't know, what are they doing in the White House? What are they doing in the Senate? And what are they doing in the House? If they don't know. The Kucinich seems to know. But nobody wants to listen to him.
Right.
You know, there's a handful of people who want to sign up for this. You know, his impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing isn't just untouched. You know, remember years ago they had that show, Thriller, black and white, I think Boris Karloff hosted it.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. I love that show.
Yeah, and, you know, it was, what, in the 50s, somewhere around in there?
Yeah.
And I used to sit there with a big old Sears catalog when they used to have a catalog, and hold it in front of my face because I know there was going to be a scene that was going to, I was going to burst into sweat no matter how cold it was.
Right.
And my older sister would pull it, she'd taunt me. Look at it's coming. Look at this guy. Look at this. I'd be peering around that catalog, and I'd see it. And there was one called The Wig of Miss DeVore. And it was where they hung this witch that had this wig made out of real witch's hairs. And they made this wig, and at the very end of the show,
yeah.
She was struck by a car. She was very young.
Yeah.
But when she took off the wig, she was horrifying. But you didn't see this till the end.
Yeah.
And that's what this whole thing feels like to me.
Aren't childhood memories wonderful?
Oh, my God, what they did. You know, you wonder why you're crazy now, or, you know, not crazy, but this way is, they terrified us as kids.
Yeah.
But I had to look. It's just like this with this Bush thing in these wars. You don't want to know about it, but you can't stop. You know, it's like an addiction almost. But when that wig came off, I forget the actor's name, this little skinny guy. I mean, little heavy guy, round-faced, he ran up and turned the headlights on this old car,
yeah.
And they show her face, and she had no eyelids, and she had skin of a snake, you know, scales. And
all right, William?
Yes.
I've got to sleep tonight.
I'm sorry.
I realize it's only 8:40 where you are, but it's 11:40 where I am, and I got to go to sleep tonight here at some point. So listen, I appreciate your synopsizing that. That horror story. Thanks for checking in, pal.
Well, you're welcome. Sorry.
All right. Take care. No, that's all right, William. Take care. I love you, pal. Take care. Thank you. I appreciate it. I could have gone all night without hearing that. There were so many of those stories. I mean, real horror stuff back on old television. Remember? Yeah, sure you do. Sure you do. Who was it? Sent me a video tonight of Lewis Black. Oh, I'm sorry. Was it James Risser that sent it to me? If you haven't seen it from YouTube, it's a 2.5-minute thing, Lewis Black, the comedian, that he does about when he was a kid and the nuclear duck and cover stuff. It only runs about 2.5 minutes. Go to YouTube and just type in Lewis Black, and if you can get it, it runs a little over 2 minutes. It is funny as hell. I'm sure you've seen it on HBO or wherever he does his specials, but funny stuff. Douglas is calling from Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Hey, Douglas.
Michael.
Hey, Douglas.
Oh, I'm doing okay tonight. I'm glad you brought this topic up. You were talking a little bit about sanity and whatnot, and it's kind of a bug of mine, so I thought I'd weigh in on it.
Yeah, it's been a bug of mine for a long time, ever since I realized that I was not completely there.
But that's not it.
Oh.
You see, it doesn't, I mean, those symptoms you see, that they're not the issue.
Yeah.
It's a question of orientation.
Mm-hmm.
We all have mental maps. And at some point, you realize your map doesn't fit. And you're crazy when you don't let go.
Yeah, right.
There's a whole an article I read about the psychology of getting lost. It was in an old, a recent National Geographic Traveler. Google it if you can. It's really scary reading the things people do, just giving up for apparently no reason. And it's all about the map.
When they're lost in the and they just say I'm not going to survive this, and then they don't.
It's more than that. They
try
to think their way out, and they can't, and they refuse to accept that. They will run around that map until their metal feet come off. And you can never tell who will have sense enough to let go and sit still and who won't. I mean, there have been Green Berets and people who have just keeled over and little old ladies who've stuck it out.
Right, right.
So anybody who messes with our maps is doing us a huge disservice.
Mm-hmm.
I saw an interview with Marshall McLuhan once, and his famous quote is, not the medium is the message, the medium is the massage. Because the medium, it's more than just a little linear message. It's everything that comes over that medium, and it can reinforce the message, it can wipe it out, or it can totally negate it. And people who try to control our maps, who want theirs to be the only voice, I think they are the most dangerous and evil people we have to face today. Yeah. Remember that quote you put out there sometimes about we won't have peace until the last lawyer strangles the entrails of the last priest?
Right.
If you substitute media mogul and ad executive, I think you have it closer to our generation.
I think you're probably right. Douglas, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. That's interesting stuff. That really is. I mean, how do you define madness, really? Every time I see Bush, no matter what he says, no matter what he does, I see madness. Just a little Wagner for you incipient neo-Nazis, huh?
I love the story of Pedro Pan. The world has waited a long time for Mr. Saddam Hussein to disarm. He'll say, oh, I'm disarming, after he said he has no arms.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our usual crew of people who can't find real work. Ian Huff, who engineered the program at our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. Billy Foster, our chat room moderator at novamradio.com. our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Thanks, everybody, and I'll see you in the camps. Back to your phone calls. Jen is calling from Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Hey, Jen.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm so glad you finally answered my... I just want to say two things. We either need to take this country back, regular people, or we need to get the hell out. Because, I mean, I don't see us having any other choices than that.
I hear you.
Yeah. That's all I wanted to say. Have a great night.
All right. Thanks, Jen. Take care. Take care. Len is calling from New York City, listening on the Internet. Hey, Len.
Hey, how you doing? You know, I was just thinking of the genius of Rumsfeld, paraphrasing him. We're going to be going to the polls with the candidates we have, not the ones we want.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I heard you talking earlier about Israel having the bomb and Iran. And
a bunch of
them. They were talking on the, debates tonight about Iran, talking about them, not talking about talking to them.
Right, right.
You know, and, you know, I argue that, I mean, if you look at it, everything makes sense in the timeline. Of course, they wanted to go back to, one of them went back to January 1981, mm-hmm. giving Reagan the credit for getting our hostages back, but... You know, we're going to have to talk, you know, at a certain time.
Can you believe that? Can you believe that these cheap imitations of human beings, these Republican candidates for president, would actually say that Reagan's
they'll
election...
They'll lie about everything.
It's incredible. It's just incredible. I feel so sorry for people who are in school right now, especially high school kids, who... Not all history teachers are this way, thank God, but so many of these kids are being pumped with this right-wing lies and garbage and gibberish like what you just said.
Right. But, you know, I've told you before, you know, I'm an Orthodox Jew.
Right.
And it made sense, and it still makes sense, that Israel has the opportunity to ultimately protect itself with the threat of retaliation. The problem is, it made more sense when it on that particular spot in the continuum. And if you asked me who I wanted to see to be president right now, it would probably be something in the neighborhood of Obama and Biden put together in some respects. Biden with the historical wisdom, and Obama with the talent to converse with people. And if they could start conversing about 1953, about the overthrow and mm-hmm. our responsibility, and just keep talking, then, you know, it would probably eliminate the need to use weapons if they could just keep talking.
I got to ask you, Len, as an Orthodox Jew, you don't believe that Israel exists.
No, there's only the ultra far Orthodox sect that believes that it's not really a country until the Messiah comes.
Right, exactly.
But
that's really
a very, very... Remember, Orthodox is only about 10-15% of the total, and those represent maybe 1 or 2% of, or 3% of the 10%.
All right. you're getting a little bit confusing for me for this late at night, but I hear you.
Well, that's okay, because remember, when the Republicans applaud that, you know, they're going to eliminate the death tax,
right.
The first question is, how many of you believe you actually are subject to that estate tax?
Right. And it works down to like 9 people.
2 out of 1,000.
Yeah. All right, Len, good to hear from you. Take care, all right?
You too. Be well.
All right. Take care. We got time for one more? Or more? Bob is calling from Tupelo, Mississippi, listening on Sirius. Hey, Bob.
What's up, Mike?
You are.
All right. You talking about invading Iran. That ain't going to happen, man. Come on, be realistic. The government, Congress ain't going to allow it. Senate ain't going to allow it. The military ain't going to allow it. Bush administration may want it, but they ain't just going to go and do it. They may try to put this country in the position to attack Iran for the next president, but it ain't going down like that.
Well,
it ain't gonna happen.
Well, like I said, Bob, you know, I can agree with you. The military wouldn't let it happen, but Congress,
the Democratic Congress, come on, be real.
What?
Be real.
What? Listen, they don't want to, this is their words, they don't want to be seen as soft on terrorism. Look, all they're talking, all they're talking.
That's election time's coming up, Mike. That's
yeah, doesn't matter.
Time coming up.
I'm sorry, Bob. Doesn't matter. All you hear, all you hear on media now is that, you know, all the bombs and roadside devices and armor penetrating
that, yeah.
weaponry is coming from Iran.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Democrats are buying
because,
into it.
Because this administration wants to set a war up against Iran. They don't want to go and do it. The Bush administration didn't have way too many military blunders to just run up in
well,
Iran
Bob,
and go
blazing. I'll continue to have, in the context of what I was talking about the only institution still able to stop this is the military. I've got, that's all I got, and I said it before.
But
that's
I'm
all.
Telling you, you really think a Democratic Congress is going to go to war against Iran? They're talking about pulling out of Iraq. They're talking about, they beat Aaron Bush out. About his military blunders.
Let's see what happens. Let's see what. Hey, Bob, I got to leave it there, man. I'm sorry. We're flat out of time. We'll talk again, and I'll try to get you call next time you call before, you know, before we have just like a minute and a half left. Wow, you people have just exhausted me tonight. Man. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? All right. Take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NOVAM Radio.